Okay, the last presentation of the morning. We are at this moment 20 minutes late. It's not a terrible situation, but it's not. We will solve in the break for lunch. Okay, the last presentations come from Susa Tolnai. Has been involved in the second phase of the UCN and e-commerce connecting practice project you saw before. It was one of the case studies. She was involved as the World Heritage Officer on the Orotobaji National Park. She was work for national parks and World Heritage Sites in Hungary for 20 years. And for the past 15 years, his heritage interpretation has become had a special interest. And besides working on interpretive projects, she runs training at different levels. And she was a fellow of UNESCO Vocation Patrimony Program in 2008 until 2010.
As you have heard, the Orotobaji National Park was selected for the second phase of connecting practice as a cultural landscape, and it was an honor to be part of the project personally, and a very nice learning experience for myself, but hopefully we also contributed to connecting practice with some experiences that can be adapted to other sites. So as a cultural landscape, I think we have talked today a lot about the connection between culture and nature, but we haven't talked much about how we can actually interpret cultural landscape. I forgot to place ourselves on the map. The Orotobaji National Park is on the eastern part of Hungary in central eastern Europe. So back to my previous idea, maybe we can say that cultural landscapes can be viewed on a continuum from the very extreme of natural, though I think the wilderness concept is no longer that much widely accepted, and the other extreme, the fully man-made. And as for the Orotobaji National Park, partly because we are a national park, so once again, our mandate goes mostly or primarily towards nature conservation, but indeed maybe it's more the site, the landscape is more to the natural or more in the natural state. Basically the site was designated under two criteria which are very closely related, and I can tell you that it caused a lot of headache to our experts when it came to identifying the attributes and values. The first attempt of listing attributes and values under each criterion failed because they were very much intermingled and proved to be inseparable. And so basically both justifications are very closely related to the age-long process of grazing and the cultures that have developed. And as you can see, under criterion 5, it acknowledges the harmonious and close existence of people and nature. And while we tend to say that over 5,000 years of history, different peoples and different cultures have shaped the land, and nature to some extent, I think it's also true the other way around, because nature and the natural features have shaped the peoples and the culture. But the common thread that runs through or runs across history is the grazing. Some basic facts about the World Heritage Site. We can say that we are very good at running for international recognitions. And so it was the very first national park in Hungary, designated in 1973. Part of the national park is also part of or under the Ramsar Convention, and basically almost all the national park is recognized as a biosphere reserve. Of course, World Heritage, why we are here mostly, and within the European network of Natura 2000 sites, the national park or even a larger area is designated. Forest a special feature, some 10,000 hectares have been recognized as a dark sky park, Silvertier dark sky park in 2011. And the most recent accolade we received that we were included in the UNESCO Astronomy and World Heritage Initiative, which indeed something of a mix or cast light on the interconnectedness of culture and nature, because the reason for listing the Hortobad is not only for the quality of the sky and for the scientific and ecological features, but also the knowledge locals still have on the dark sky. Unfortunately, it's a diminishing knowledge. Well, modern way of life, technology, and political, social changes have taken their tolls on this knowledge, but it's still there. Right in the in our modern world, in a European country, I think it's still something to appreciate much. So the national park is in the name of the World Heritage Site, but indeed not all of the current national park is part of the World Heritage. Since there has been some addition to the national park. However, when it was designated as a World Heritage Site in 1999, basically it covered the total area of the national park. Unfortunately, and it's a huge debt since the nomination, we don't have a buffer zone yet, though we are really working on it. And the process is very promising. Of course, legislative processes tend to be very slow, and we experience that a lot. A few words on the management aspect of the World Heritage Site. Basically, as I've already mentioned, they both as an organization and as a land fall under nature conservation legal leverages, and that gives the protection for the area as a bulk. But there are listed monuments, but they are only singular objects that fall under cultural protection. As for the managing organization, the Hortobad National Park Directorate, which was founded along with the National Park itself in 1973, but we were commissioned as a official managing organization for the World Heritage Site in 2013. It's a renewable mandate, and basically the span of this mandate is 7 years. So we are approaching really the end, and we'll see if we will continue on this position. As an organization, a nature conservation organization, we have a much larger operational area, pulling in three counties and over 1 million hectares of land, including some further protected areas. So when it comes to like how many people are responsible for the World Heritage Site or how much budget the World Heritage Site has, it's not that easy to answer. And if I add that there is at least one major organization working within the national park and directly involved with grazing and animal husbandry, it gets even more complicated. So to some extent, each of my colleagues basically work for the World Heritage Site, but literally speaking about that staffing, like one, or if we are lucky, two people get involved directly. And we are not that much subsidized for this, though there is a very small seed money coming directly from the government to deal with issues related to World Heritage. Well, one of the major points connecting practice aspired to look at, or to look at the values and attributes of the sites, and the coming slides will just give you very short insight what the site looks like, and well, first of all, the various values assets don't represent any priority order and does not represent even the fullness of all the values. It's, well, of course, the restraints of such a presentation. And basically, I said it was a big challenge even for our very insightful experts to sort out, okay, which value should go where. Basically, kind of it boiled down to the approach that we really need to look at these values together, because they, like, looking at the singular assets doesn't tell the full story. So looking in the complexity and taking this holistic view gives kind of a new quality and probably contributes to the OUV of the site. So it's an alkaline pasture or mosaic of alkaline habitats. So the soil properties and the micro relief, as well as the water regime, are quite important. I would, well, if you are familiar with earth sciences, it's called like edaphic habitats, where these two properties, these two aspects are sometimes more important than climatic effects. Of course, a special vegetation, or I would say a complex and a mosaic of vegetation, is native there. Well, we actually carried out a similar exercise during the elaboration of the World Heritage Management Plan, and like we included several aspects. Some have, like the open vistas, have links with aesthetic, like values, but like open business can be considered something related to the natural and cultural aspects, like the low number of landscape elements is not just an aesthetic aspect of the site, but also has relation to ecological and even cultural aspects of the site. Like we included natural phenomena of and even more abstract notions like the atmosphere of the sunset in the Pusta. Of course, it also has the natural background, like the mirage happens, or the sunset looks like as it looks like there, because of the landscape, because of the soil properties, because of the climatic effects. So it's really, if we really go into details, it becomes very complicated. However, in the very first place, the Pusta very often consider the nothing, like what is this big nothing? And when you look at the big nothing closer, it becomes quite complicated. Of course, a very core attribute of the site are the traditional grazing breeds, which developed locally, so they're kind of autochthonous breeds, like the Rotska sheep, or, well, you can see the other one, the Hungarian grey cattle. And also, we are coming more to the cultural aspects, like the animal husbandry, these herdsmen has used for centuries. And here I have to say a note in brackets, like what we haven't really discussed during connecting practice phase two is the authenticity, because we did not really set a time, the reference era, what would count as authentic. We have a kind of a connection with the near past, or the connection with the past 200 years or maybe 300 years, but what constitutes as authentic is an issue that can be explored further, and I think a very, very exciting one. While the long history is very evident, as the very first nomad herders arrived here more than 5,000 years ago, and their burial mounds bear witness to the, once again, this dual nature, because they are man-made, artificial. However, they represent a great value for nature conservation. In fact, they are not protected under cultural legislation, but under nature conservation law. And they have been key to explore the land history and to draw paleobotanic and paleozoological data and evidence what this land might look like thousands of years ago. Of course, the traditional structures, once again, something of a big question, because modernization is there, reed and all these decaying materials are not much preferred, and it's a question how we use incentives to still maintain these structures attractive to those ones who are interested not only the heritage aspect, but very obviously the economic aspect of animal husbandry on the site. And while World Heritage recognizes more of the physical aspect, it is now well accepted that the intangible heritage is key to maintain the physical aspect. So these first men are, well, this is one field, one area we need to explore more. And this is one area when our managing practices maybe can be criticized. Like, we don't have really staff members dealing with real, though we sometimes we have projects and we can outsource certain tasks So as for the connecting practice project, we were approached in 2016 to join in at a later stage of the second phase already running. So it was quite a quick process, and for us the project was really short, and this is just to support or back up what Leticia said, that it really, the working group really included all levels, from local to national and up to international. And despite this very short time span of the project, there have been some changes. Fortunately, the experts could stay with us throughout the project, and they were really insightful for in their reports. I do recommend you to read that. While scoping of the project content, of course, IUCN and ECOMOS had issues on the table, but they invited us to bring our concerns, our issues into the project, which we did. And this is for me still, despite all the technical and scientific findings, one of the big gains of the project was this open and very democratic process we pursued throughout the project. And I think it was very effective in exploring the deeper like meanings and connections. So I think it's a good method. So basically, two site visits took place. The first one basically to explore the site and make up for the shortage of English language materials. So unfortunately, we could not provide loads of that. There are loads of materials in Hungarian, not in English. And so basically, there were three key areas we studied. The first two ones were brought in by the project itself. And the third one, how collective grazing, like the land has never been private property. The fashion they use throughout centuries to drive animals to the area from different cities, from different owners, and they use the land in quite a dynamic, but a very much regulated way. And also the a joint issue we wanted to deal with, how the vocational training could be enhanced or reinforced, because this is not a very lucrative vocation anymore for very obvious reason. Not only because of the relatively low esteem, but also low economic and financial reward. So we try to expose our experts to as many stakeholder inputs as possible, from local municipalities to peer organizations, farmers associations, NGOs. So of course it was just a very, very short and very quick input or possibility to have impressions on the site. I think the second visit was very much needed because a lot of open and a lot of unsettled questions remained on the table. So further clarifications were necessary. And already during the second phase, we kind of disseminated, I wouldn't say the results, but like what this project is about and what the idea is behind. This a small workshop took place in the Ministry of Agriculture that runs World Heritage Working Group, inviting all the protected areas and other relevant institutions. I mean, the all national parks where World Heritage sites are present, even if maybe not for the very same reason, but that was a good opportunity to disseminate some of the results. So, we, of course, there was a big effort to direct all the knowledge, all the experiences, impressions towards the project report. So what lessons we have learned, or what lessons have been outlined in the report, I'm trying to summarize it shortly. I would say that the approach, a kind of a holistic approach, and the recognition of nature and culture as inseparable and that need to be managed in a joint manner was present in the site for decades. I would say like it was kind of a very obvious approach for the founding fathers of the national park and like later management. So maybe that's something we could contribute the project with, that it's not necessarily that the notion of the site that is the problem. It's more like the details that can be a problem and bring about challenges. Like concerning the management and the governance of this site, I tried to indicate whether for the past year some positive or negative or neutral processes have taken place. Like there was a key recommendation on improving our cooperation with stakeholders, and even though there are no such things as a national park council or no any body that really influences the decision-making process, in an informal way we started started networking more with the local communities and peer organizations. Well, during the connecting practice, we were already finishing the World Heritage Management Plan, and it's been finished. So it's kind of a plus, a bigger plus than a minus. The minus goes to the fact that it hasn't become, maybe it's not the only way to put something into effect, but supposedly it should come out as a piece of legislation as well. So we are not very good at that, as I mentioned, with the buffer zone. In this case, the management plan hasn't become a piece of legislation as yet. There was a recommendation of harmonizing the management plans. In fact, since all the area is state-owned and the main managing organization is the national park, in fact, the problem wasn't really, or isn't really, the harmonization of the different management plans of the different designations. The problem really is whether we can make one integrated management plan. Well, I can say nothing has happened because so much should be done in the background with a legislative background, but I'm not quite sure. I mean, we always use the management plans and use as resources if a new management plan is elaborated, but so far we haven't really reached, or it's beyond our competence to move more forward to this direction. Well, another issue, and it's kind of quite typical with several of the issues, that some changes should be made on national or even international level, like changing some unfavorable legal and economic leverages, whether it goes to like building requirements or EU subsidies on agricultural lands. Obviously, we are at the end of the technical procedure. And as for the, there was a strong recommendation to reinforce and to make sure of the continuity of the managing body. I put here a big minus because we are facing big staff cuts in the coming weeks. So not only, as I mentioned, we don't have certain competences on the staff, we might lose capacities altogether. I mean, not altogether, but that would adversely affect the management of the society, hopefully not. As for the values and attributes, there was a recommendation during the visit. We all tended to use the term the rules of the PUSTA. So there was a recommendation. Okay, well, you use this and you know what the notion behind and what the details behind, but maybe with a collaborative procedure, it would be nice to define it more, maybe put it in writing, and I think it was a very good idea not to deal with it as a management plan kind of procedure, but really as a means and tools of communication. There were some recommendations how the ancient management units that are still there and we still use it in nature conservation could and should be further explored, that can reveal some deeper connections of the values and attributes of the site. And of course the culturally modified habitats should be more documented, which are very much influenced by the various grazing regimes. Also, having direct influence for both the cultural and natural aspects. And as for the retaining the scenic aspect of the landscape, which is not that much recognized in the ECOMOS evaluation and justification, I think we are most successful with this one, partly because of the prospect of the buffer zone, and partly launching a joint project with the Budapest Polytechnic University. So we hope that we can, on the long term, come up with partly survey of the built environment, maybe beyond that, and and come up with some recommendations we can forward to today's farmers and farmsteads or farm owners, for example, with building parameters or something like that, because for these 5,000 years, we cannot neglect the fact that there have been changes and there is a certain dynamism in the system, both in the cultural and in the natural aspects. So we have to, and that relates very much to the authenticity of the site, like how much change, how much dynamism is allowed, so to say. So it's a very, very interesting project, I think, and involves a lot of the learning by doing aspect, just like an active practice. Yes, some recommendations went to the social and economic issues, like the training, the reinforcement of the training of the herdsman. While we had some negotiations, which was now hindered because of the general elections and the, well, basically we have the same governments, but still the structures are changing all the time, so it's quite difficult to find the right people to cooperate with the system. And of course, one thing that once we have the livestock there, there should be some products, and how or what kind of incentives can be used for better marketing of these products, or even putting new products to the market. And there were some further benefits of the Connecting Practice project to the site management. As I mentioned, one was that basically it's always nice to be in the focus of such an international program and be the live, be a kind of a laboratory for such a project. And of course, linking all these levels, international with the local, gives, I think, new insight into each other's work, which is very inspiring. And of course, with the recommendations I've just talked about, of course, it gave us the opportunity to revisit even the nomination dossier, even the ECOMOS evaluation, and even our previous efforts to understand the very assets themselves and their interrelatedness. So, and of course, similar to the previous point, it was an opportunity for us to cross-check some of the objectives we have set up in the World Heritage Management Plan. And we have heard about that while there are already a wealth of knowledge from the two phases, and I'm happy we contribute to this process in phase two, and probably some experience are channeled towards phase three. And well, personally, I am very privileged to be involved in phase three. So in that sense, there is a kind of a relying of what has been found and relying on people involved. I think that's an asset on its own right. So I would like to thank you for your attention with this picture, which gives you like the true nature with all the the kind of elements that are present and where culture and nature are really truly in a harmonious state. former director of the National Park said that such structures don't disturb the vista and the landscape, but give certain depth to it. I completely agree with his view.